Live from downtown Chicago.
Well, and all this gobbledygook.
It's the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Back in the disc jockey days, I used to know. Song of the year or record of the year? Yeah, nobody knows. Is this the song of the year or the record of the year?
I think it's the record of the year.
Record of the year.
Yeah.
This is the big, this is like best movie, best picture. I swear to you, this song was out like at the end of 2014. It's like a year and a half ago. How is it still eligible for a Grammy?
It did get Record of the Year, and someone said that about Meghan Trainor, too, that she got Best New Artist, and she's been around for a couple years now.
So here's the thing about the Eagles tribute, because I love the Eagles. I don't know if you know that about me. And Jackson Browne can't sing anymore, but it's fine. It's Jackson Browne. Jackson Browne's the guy that Don Henley and Glenn Frey lived with when they needed a place to stay when the Eagles first started. And the band, seeing the original guitarist back up there again, Bernie Ledden, mm-hmm. who left the band early. He was there, so that was great. But the Eagles, there was no introduction for it. They cut off the woman who wrote Ed Sheeran's song before she could do her acceptance speech. And then there was nothing else after. And I guess there were so many tributes last night, it was hard to get it all done. Like the Lionel Richie thing, I don't know if you know Lionel's not dead, but Lionel Richie tribute, I think there ought to be a rule that if you're going to sing a tribute song for Lionel Richie, you had to be alive when the song was a hit.
Exactly.
Half the
right.
people singing those songs weren't alive.
I thought that was well done.
But get some people who knew Lionel Richie. Lionel Richie's true. Going, yeah, this is great. Who are you?
Yeah, and where was Dancing on the Ceiling? That's what I wanted to hear.
And Lionel sang all right. Lionel got up there. He shook it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Lionel sang great.
Yeah,
he did a great job.
Oh, boy.
But Lady Gaga, you were just talking about this. Oh. Lady Gaga is so talented. She's ridiculous.
She killed it. I mean, when she started out, I thought that was the only song she was going to do. And then when she went from, she literally took on all of his characters, all of his personas, which was wonderful. She's just amazingly talented. And did you see?
I choreographed all that dancing. You probably knew that.
Did you see they did a little?
Oh, you didn't know that?
Did you really?
Yeah.
I was going to say they did a behind the scenes of how they put it all together, which was pretty cool, too.
So Grammys is an entertaining award show. And when the Hawks got up 24-2, it was easy to take a break from the Hawks last night. It looked great.
Yeah, but it was
seven goals.
It was hard to turn it off, though. I mean, they looked so good.
Well, Dave, you get just your one-track mind, Dave. There's a lot going on in the world.
Well, I know that.
You know, once you get seven goals, you got to go, what else is happening
in the
world? That's
why picture-in-picture was in bed.
And that's why The Bachelor was on.
All right, now I didn't see The Bachelor.
I didn't watch much of it either, I admit, because I was going back and forth with the Hawks and the Grammys.
At any point last night, Dave, did Patrick Kane give the goalie for the Maple Leafs a rose? Just because he felt bad for him?
No, he should have.
So 7-2 the final for the Hawks. And then in your presidential escapades, Hillary Clinton barked, which is unfortunate because that's going to live forever. Unfortunate for her. And Donald Trump says he may now sue Ted Cruz unless Ted Cruz apologizes. Again, narcissistic, pathological lunatic. The guy that would never apologize may sue Ted Cruz for not apologizing. You can't make it up. At 6:11 in the morning, Hamp's on later. The reason we're bringing Hamp back is because we're doing something on Saturday night, which is pretty cool. It's the former Better Boys Foundation. It's the Better Boys and Family Foundation, I think. Got to get this name right. Kev, did we get any one-sheets on this yesterday that would explain all of this?
We do. It's in your notes there, Steve. If you flip a page, it should be on the second one there.
Kev, I can't be asked to flip a page.
I apologize. I could come flip it for
you.
Don't
we have people flipping pages for me? Let's see. SAC, the Roast of Richard Dent, Saturday, February 20th. That's this Saturday at Revel Fulton Market. It's BBF Family Services. That's a new name. BBF Family Services, formerly the Better Boys Foundation, helping kids and youth in North Lawndale, providing opportunities to maximize their lives. The list of people coming in to be roasters is ridiculous. Joe Montana's coming in.
Is he really?
Yeah. Because, you know, Richard Dent spent a lot of time knocking Joe Montana down.
They got to know each other.
So that's pretty cool. So anyway, Mike Wilbon, I said something incorrect yesterday. I said I was emceeing this. Mike Wilbon's going to emcee it. I'm going to be the monkey that opens the show and then hangs around in case any of the athletes, suddenly lose it. And it's tough. Yeah, roasts are tough.
So you're kind of the chaperone.
I'm the court jester.
Ah, got
so,
it.
But I'll be there as well, so that'll be a great night. And we hope you'll get involved. You can go to the events page at WGNradio.com. There's also something called the Afterburn After Party, where all of the superstars will be, and you can get in on that, too.
How late will you be staying at the Afterburn?
Well, you know me. Normally, Saturday night, I'm at an all-night rave.
Well, I know. That's why I asked.
The one thing you don't want to be is between me and my car once an event is over.
Yeah.
The Iceman.
It's kind of like
we've seen that.
It's kind of like Joe Montana when Richard Dent was after him. No, it's the after party. It's a nice thing for everybody to get involved with.
Sure.
Nobody needs me in the way there. I'll,
that's one
I'll
way
be outside. And to bring it full circle all the way back to the Grammys, whichever of the team of sound techs involved in making sure that all the audio is hooked up right at the Grammys, all the worrisome engineering that goes on, all the amazing lighting that goes on, it's tremendous work they do. And how fast after the Grammys do you think the audio tech who didn't plug in Adele stuff right got fired?
Oh, my God, no
Poor
kidding.
Poor Adele.
As soon as she started, I think she was, what, two notes in, and then the mic went down and then back up. And then
the mic was weird. The piano mix was too loud. It just seems like in the meeting for all of this, you go, all right, here's what you do. You got to get Adele right.
Nick Vigilio was telling me this morning the microphone fell into the piano, and Adele tweeted that these things happen. You know, they tried to get it back up, and then it was just a mess. And she was out of key the entire song.
Well, I don't think she could
hear
it.
Yeah, she was. I don't think she could hear it.
I felt so bad for her.
But she's so amazing. Did you like, I have to ask you, did you like the Gwen Stefani video that they did?
No, I didn't at all.
I didn't think so.
No. It's a cute little song. If anyone else in the world sang it.
It never ended. Just kept going.
It was good, though. I like how they set it up in the middle with the cameras. You didn't like that so much?
Not so much, no. Okay. No, I don't know if you know this about her. She's a terrible person.
But I did think of you the whole time she was singing.
So did I. I thought it was a commercial.
It did look like a commercial.
Very
You know what it looked like? A Target commercial.
Yeah.
Well, it was sponsored by Target. It was supposed to be, yeah. I mean, I think you're going to start seeing Gwen Stefani doing Target commercials.
Well, then
now,
I'm not going to Target anymore.
They sponsored that endeavor that she tried to do last night. It was cool, though.
What was the endeavor? She had some.
No, didn't
thing?
They set it up? They did like they basically made
a
music.
I was going to shock you. I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay.
As soon as I saw Gwen Stefani come on, I was gone.
They made a music video. They were basically shooting a music video as she was doing it. So it came. I'm telling you this. I know you don't care.
Somebody said she roller skated or something.
It was in this almost like a tube, like
whatever.
A tubular set that they had
Just
her in.
Retire. Oh, grandma.
Oh.
6:15. Nick DiGilio coming up. Kid of the Week coming up. Hawks Express coming up. And that's just our number one. And by the way, after 8:30 this morning, Jeffrey Stone from the University of Chicago Law School will be on to talk a little bit more about the ramifications post-death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, more from the legal aspect. Karen Conti will hit on that tomorrow as well. It's 6:16. I thank you for listening to the Steve Cochran Show, number 588 at Twitter on Cochran Show and at Facebook at Steve Cochran Show. Texters 312-981-7200 and marry with your traffic trouble spots.
There'll be people along the way who will try to undercut your success or take credit for your accomplishments or your fame. Because, baby, now we got.
Well, I got to bed kind of late last night because, you know, being a Swiftie, I was up to like 1 a.m. arguing about whether or not we like Taylor Swift's new haircut.
You know,
I was very wrapped up in it emotionally.
Did you see Nick DiGilio put something on either Twitter or Facebook about how, you know, she just gets so excited and over the top when she wins? Well, now she did it for other people. Because I thought she won whatever.
Ed Sheeran when she flipped out for Ed Sheeran?
Yeah.
Well, they dated or something.
What?
Yeah, no, I think they did. I think they dated, which is funny because she's a foot taller and he's kind of goofy looking.
I don't know.
By the way,
if
you're a 17, 18-year-old dude, and why wouldn't you be up listening at this hour to talk radio? If you're Nick DiGilio joins us now, and you can back me up on this, Nick. If you're a 17 or an 18-year-old dude and you're a little goofy looking like Ed Sheeran, learn how to play a guitar. Learn how to play a guitar. You play a guitar and you write a couple of songs. Oh, you're going to get a girlfriend. Yes, you are.
There's no question. Have you seen Jimmy Page?
Jimmy Page, yeah. It's a long list of goofy-looking guitar players that did just fine, thank you.
So, yeah.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good.
So, were you like me? Were you a Swiftie? Were you up all night arguing about Taylor Swift's haircut?
Oh, yeah, I'm a Swiftie.
Is that the name? Are they Swifties? I think they're Swifties.
We actually started calling her Swifty on the show this morning. I think they call her Tay Tay.
Yes, they call her Tay Tay. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that makes you Tay Tayers. I don't know.
Kevin, look up the name of the group of fans. Unless, do you know?
No, Swifties.
Are they Swifties?
Yeah.
Seems to make sense. Just Swifty sounds like a mob name. Yeah, Swifty.
Can you just say that you're a Swiffer and you can also clean up while you're a fan?
Oh, I'm being told we're all Swifties.
I always say I'm a Nay-tayer.
Oh, you don't like Taylor Swift?
Not a huge fan. Mm. I like the fact that she does things for other people and helps kids who are sick. I like that, but I don't like her music.
Well, she's pretty successful. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
Yeah. Other than the sound guy getting fired right after the Adele performance was over, any favorite moments last night?
The B.B. King tribute, by far, I thought was the best thing that last night, because there were people on stage who were, like, you know what they were doing? They were playing instruments and stuff.
What?
It was pretty amazing. Yeah.
It's too bad they couldn't play louder when Jackson Browne was singing to the Eagles.
He wrote that song, though.
So, I know he wrote that song.
Yeah. But I thought the B.B. King tribute was great. And as far as, like, because I'm, you know, the stuff that the kids are listening to, man, I don't know. But Kendrick Lamar was unbelievable. Kendrick Lamar's performance was absolutely amazing. And, as you know, for me, the highlight was the B.B. King tribute. But as far as, like, what the kids are listening to, this guy's the man. And his performance was pretty stunning.
Well, no, the performance artistically. But, again, I am getting a little tired of being white and being told I'm a racist because I'm white. And that was the big opening to the thing. You know, you can make your statement, but let's not act like, you know, a multi-million-dollar artist is a slave in chains. I get the symbolism, but, you know, let's keep things in perspective. Okay, Kendrick? All right, talk to you later. Hey, by the way, Kevin saw Deadpool and loved it.
Yeah, he was drunk.
Nick, I am shocked that you did not enjoy this movie because it seems to be right up your alley. There's plenty of violence, a lot of cursing, and it's pretty funny throughout the entire thing.
Were you in the wrong theater?
But who, me?
Yeah.
Or Kevin?
No, Kevin, I know, saw the right movie because he went at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was great. I loved it. I thought it was entertaining.
So what did you not like about it, Nick?
I just didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it was particularly clever. You know, if you throw 55 quips out every minute, one of them will stick. You know, and unfortunately, most of them fell on the floor. And there was no structure to the movie. It was like there were no rules to it. Evidently, you could just make, like, this character, even though he exists in a world where Wolverine really exists, but he can also make jokes about Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine. So I was just confused as
That's
to what
the
logic
was. That's why it's funny, because it's still Wolverine, even if there's some world where he does exist. It's still Wolverine. That's why I think
no,
you can
I know
make
that,
fun
but
of
doesn't, but that means there's no rules to the comedy. I mean, it's like anybody could write any joke, and, you know, like, I could just, like, write a movie and just throw in a bunch of jokes that make no sense, and if they're vulgar and they're kind of racy, then it'll work just because the rules don't apply.
Well, it sounds like a Lorne Michaels movie. Was it one long bit?
Well, no, I didn't even think it was a bit. It was just like, hey, guess what? We're going to make this movie. He's an anti-superhero. And all we're going to do is just have Ryan Reynolds make smart-ass comments for 90 minutes. And there is no rules to what kind of comments he can make. And none of them, I mean, seriously, I thought like 90% of the quips that he makes, and he makes roughly 612 quips in the movie, I thought like two of them were funny. And I just didn't think it was clever. I didn't think it was funny. And, you know, basically, you build up to this giant climax where these two guys are fighting. The hero, who is an anti-hero, and the bad guy are fighting. Neither one of them can die. Where is the suspense in that?
No, how did you know neither one of them can die? I haven't seen it, obviously.
Well, because they can't. It's like Deadpool at one point in the movie, he rips apart his body and cuts his own arm off while he's making a 127 hours joke. And then his arm grows back. So he can't die.
Well, it's a comic book movie.
Right.
So there's that. I don't think we could really analyze the arm growing back or people not being able to die because it's a comic book movie.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, Kevin. Have you ever seen a comic book movie where there's actual suspense in the final battle? Because I have.
I don't know. They're comic book movies. Most of them take themselves too seriously. That's what I loved about this movie. It doesn't take itself seriously.
All right, look, here's what I'll do. I'll go see it, and I'll decide for both of you.
Perfect.
That's why I like Galaxy, the Guardians of the Galaxy, which was an absolutely hilarious movie and 50,000 times better than this movie.
Hold on a second. Let's go to Andrea on this. Andrea, you hated Guardians of the Galaxy.
I did hate Guardians of the Galaxy, but so I don't get in the middle of this little bro riff, I did not see Deadpool yet.
But you didn't like Guardians of the Galaxy.
I didn't. No. Oh, I thought end this.
Yeah. By the way, Dave Ennett hated Mad Max Fury Road.
I haven't seen Mad Max Fury Road. Not the new one, anyway.
Those are fighting words.
I just want to see if Nick's head would explode.
Seriously, I would have been on the L coming downtown. Right?
I know. He's just trying to start trouble.
Can I really make Nick's head explode before you say bye? It's the, what is it, the 25th anniversary of my favorite movie of all time, Nick, The Silence of the Lambs.
That's your favorite movie of all time?
I'd say top two, sure.
Now, you talk about funny. Funny movie.
It is a funny movie. So then you've only seen two movies.
I love you, Nick.
You know, I'm one of the few people that never saw Silence of the Lambs.
Are you kidding me?
Come on. Seriously?
Never saw it.
It was one of the best movies ever.
I talked to Nick, and he told me not to go.
Nick, was that the last movie? was that the last movie that swept the Oscars as far as best picture, director, actor?
I think you're thinking of the cannibal genre.
She's right. It's the last movie to get all. Sorry. Yeah, all major awards, including the acting awards.
Right.
Because the last movie to win all the awards it was nominated for, except for one, was the third Lord of the Rings movie, which swept everything, but none of the actors really got nominated. So
I always thought there'd be a good product placement opportunities in Silence of the Lambs, like Prilosec next to him right after he eats somebody else. So, all right, what are you doing tonight?
Tonight we got a band coming in live, and we're going to talk about, because that Jazz Record Mart closed.
Uh-huh.
And that's a sad thing, man. And so we're going to talk about, we're going to remember old, really great mom and pop shops that are no longer around. And that place was just legendary. And we're going to talk about the old mom and pop shops like the Jazz, the market that closed.
All right, cool. Thanks, buddy.
You got it, my man.
See you at Nick D Show on your social media situation. It's 6:29. Kevin and Nick are continuing the argument off the air. We'll come back, get to the big story and the kid of the week in about 10 minutes on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
6:43, we've reached that time, as we do each week, where we honor a kid of the week for doing something great. You could enter your kid of the week or some kid you've heard about that you think we ought to know about. Go to WGNradio.com/contest and submit an entry for a child between 5 and 18 that you think is exceptional in any way, shape, or form. By the way, we want to thank Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. They are sponsoring Kid of the Week again. And at the end of this year, as they did last year, they again will present a $5,000 prize awarded courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch. And the whole Ray family, tremendous people, just good people. See the full inventory at rayandraymonddeals.com. Joining us now, the Kid of the Week this week, it's Lucas Stomberg. Good morning, Lucas. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. You're a freshman where?
I go to Rockford Christian High School.
All right. What do you want to do after high school? You going on to college, I assume?
Yeah. I'm thinking about maybe being a lawyer or an engineer.
Oh, so very good. How are your grades?
Pretty good. I'm pretty hardcore about getting bad grades. I really don't like them.
Good. Good for you. You got a big family?
Not that. There's five people. I've got a brother and a sister.
Are they older or younger?
I have an older brother and a younger sister.
Oh, the middle kid.
Yeah.
Oh boy, that's trouble. No, I never knew what that meant because my sister Leslie is the middle child, and sure, she's a goofball. But Lucas, you seem like you've got your act together.
I would hope so.
Yeah, he's modest. Can you tell? Andrea, let me tell you about Lucas. And this again is a moment, Lucas, where, and you'll understand this someday as a parent. But this is a moment where all parents feel bad about their own kids because, Lucas, you're doing so many great things. So here we go. Lucas is a straight-A student, a travel baseball player. He's into Taekwondo and co-founder and president of K-Cancer Baseball, a 501c3 nonprofit that supports local families battling childhood cancer. More on that in a moment. And he is speaking, or maybe you've done this. Did you speak? Was it last week at the Gold Ribbon Gala?
Yeah, I did.
Just prior to the keynote speech from Fergie Jenkins, the Cubs Hall of Famer. And if you want more information on the charity, it's kcancerbaseball.com. But here's a kid in 15 who's got plenty going on. Most 15-year-olds are worried about, getting their license in a year or so. Hey, can I have this? Can I have that? Lucas, doing all the stuff he's doing, getting straight A's and giving back. So explain to us, if you would, Lucas, what K Cancer Baseball is.
Five of us, pretty much kids my age, got together with our head coach, and he gave us a quick little seminar about what a business was and what a non-for-profit is. And we wrote up the bylaws and the articles of incorporation, and we made K Cancer Baseball, which is basically, it's our company to help make people that are going through childhood cancer within the Rockford area feel like they're not as alone in their fight. So we'll like go out and we'll meet with the kids. We've got like 9 teammates, we call them.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give them like a gift basket with a gas card and stuff just to help them make the trips up to the hospitals that they have to go to that are hours away. It's been pretty great.
Just to limit some stress, just take a little stress off their lives. And tell Andrea how much money you've raised.
In total, I'm not exactly sure how much. I know just from the Gold Ribbon Gala, we raised $28,000. And before that, I think we had raised $35,000 in total.
I laugh because he's 15.
Yeah.
I laugh because this is an example of what kids do and what kids can do. It really, really is amazing. Santa Lucas.
Lucas, did you ever think at your age you'd be the CEO of a company, basically, of a charity?
Absolutely not. No.
And you're a great speaker, too, obviously. You don't mind getting up in front of crowds and talking.
No, I don't mind it that much. I'm a little nervous.
What position do you play in baseball?
I'm mostly a catcher.
So I know Fergie Jenkins was a little before your time, but did you get a chance to see any YouTube on him or anything?
Yeah, I saw some stuff about him. And, you know, he talked a lot about what he did.
Did you get a chance to talk to him at all about baseball when you guys weren't on stage?
Not too much. We got to meet with him and take a picture, but we didn't get to talk that much.
He's a nice man. He's Canadian, so he's quiet, but he's a nice man. And yeah. And stay in touch with him because I'm sure he's got some great advice for you as baseball goes along as well. You're an amazing young man, Lucas Domburg. We've got some prizes for you, which I'll have Kevin tell you about off the air. But mostly I just appreciate all you're doing and all you continue to do. And please make sure all your friends get involved every time they can and as much as they can because it takes an army, buddy.
Yep. Thank you very much.
All right. You hold the line. Lucas Domburg, you don't need to mess around with us. He's got to go to school and get another A.
This is awesome, too. His organization, and how cool is that to say his organization at 15? They have 15 boys on their travel baseball team and 12 girls on their travel softball team, all representing K-Cancer Baseball in tournaments all over the northern portion of the state.
Rockford area.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, just another kid. Not quite. Exceptional young person who is getting it done every day. And I know what you're saying, Steve. I am going to make sure that you know about my kid of the week. Or, Steve, what is wrong with my kid? They're still sleeping. Kevin, what am I giving away?
How about one of those 3-foot by 4-foot official Chicago sports team throw rugs?
Oh, sure. Boldly emblazoned with your favorite Chicago sports team logo, courtesy of Tri-State Carpet and Floor in Elgin. You can afford to be floored. Visit iwantabefloored.com. What else?
How about a pizza party for Lucas and his buddies, courtesy of Lou Malnati's, 1-800-LUDIGO.
And ludigo.com. And, of course, Mindy Kaplan, Dave Kaplan's lovely wife, is really the brains of that operation. I don't mean Lou's. She's terrific at Lou's. I mean the brains of the Kaplan family. Of course, that's not a great compliment to Mindy. I mean, if I'm comparing Mindy to Cap, right?
We love Mindy.
I mean, come on.
Code is Studley. We're fine.
And a ChevyDriveChicago.com and WGN Radio stainless steel travel mug and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. We're not encouraging the 15-year-old to start a lifetime of coffee, but he can give it to his family. So, all good?
All good.
And thank you again to Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. I'm sure they have a presence out at the auto show as well, so stop by and see them. At 6:49, we go to Mary for your traffic trouble spots. I see you. I see you in your car. Do you think I'm a nasty girl? you're over 40. You're shaking it as you drive to work this morning.
Maybe over 35.
You're having a flashback for your club nights in the 80s. Remember Vanity 6?
Prince's...
one of Prince's proteges.
Was she a backup singer for him at one point?
Backup dancer.
Backup dancer, yeah. She was awesome.
And he put together a bunch of different groups, including Vanity 6. That was the only hit they ever had. Denise Matthews is the lead singer. She died yesterday. She's only 57 years old.
How sad.
She didn't have kidney disease for years. She actually became a lay preacher late in life and changed her party-going ways. But she, along with Apollonia Cotero, were the two most famous ladies of Prince from the big 80s, other than the two, Wendy and Lisa, that backed Prince up.
That's right.
You know, and when they both play guitar, I think.
Yeah, this is really dating myself. We, you know, of course, I grew up with all of these songs, and my friend April in high school decided that she wanted all of us to call her Apollonia. So she signed all of our yearbooks Apollonia.
She was great. So I knew her a little bit
awesome.
From the Minneapolis days. Mm-hmm. So, and like most of Prince's women around me, they were all hands. We'll get to the Hawks Express, but with 7 goals last night, the Hawks Express today is over an hour and a half long. So we may just replay the game. That's how good it was. Couple of minutes before 7. Also coming up, $1 billion in meth found in bras. I knew they were dangerous. We'll get to that story, the $1 billion bra fill or meth filled bra situation coming up. You know, Dave, anytime there is a prominent athlete or a prominent celebrity who has a health crisis, it's an opportunity for us to remind people to take good care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Chris Bosh from the Miami Heat pulled out of the All-Star game because of a strained calf. And now there is some concern and some reports, unconfirmed, that he could have a return of the blood clot problem. Now, having gone through this myself and having a blood clot move from my calf and then break up into 3 blood clots and end up in my lung, it's called pulmonary embolism, I could have stroked out or been dead very quickly. And fortunately, I got to the hospital. They caught it in time. Same thing with Bosch and same thing with so many folks that you have heard in the past few years that have these sort of issues, but not everybody makes it. There was an NBC newsman a few years ago who was embedded with a particular division in Iraq who spent a lot of time in the back of a truck traveling across Iraq in a cramped position, got a blood clot, and he died. Because when the blood clot travels to your heart or to your brain, that's where you could die almost instantly. And it has happened a lot. So the point of this being, Chris Bosh has great medical care, and he's going to be fine. The long-term effects on his NBA career yet to be determined. But it's a simple sort of thing. When you have an unusual cramping in your calf, if you feel your calf and there's sensitivity or it's warm to the touch, that's a early to midterm indicator that you could have a problem. There's a thing called DVT, deep vein thrombosis, which is hard to diagnose. But if you have that sort of calf issue, like a pain that you don't understand, and mine was almost to my knee, so it was a little unusual. And having bad knees, I wrote it off because I was an idiot. Don't write it off. Go to a doctor. The worst case scenario is the doctor's going to tell you, yeah, you know what, you strained your calf, you strained your knee, whatever, you're going to be fine. But if it is a blood clot, it is a ticking time bomb, and it's nothing to mess with.
If you remember in the case of Chris Bosh, it was last year, it was about, well, a little later than this, when he had the problem, I think it might have even been during the playoffs, but he missed the playoffs.
Right.
And he was out the rest of the season. He was hospitalized. It was a pretty serious situation.
And once you, I'll tell you, in my case, I was sitting in the emergency room. I mean, I didn't feel great, but I didn't feel terrible at that point because I was in the hospital. And the emergency room doctor came in after running a couple tests and did this. Well, this isn't good.
Oh,
that's
no.
Not what you want to hear. But I was lucky. I was blessed. I, when it was Dr. Most, Got me in time to get it checked out.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ignore it for a while longer and see what happened.
Not good.
But you get an education on these things because of things like that or things that I went through. So anyway, we just want you to take that to heart and understand if you have those sort of symptoms. And that's not the foolproof test, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if you have calf cramping or a warmth there or sensitivity to the touch, go to a doctor. Not later. Not tomorrow. Go now.
And you can get a very quick ultrasound, too,
yeah,
of your leg.
Yeah,
a very
yeah.
quick and easy test.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're flying a lot, if you have a long flight.
Well, that's what it was for me, just in all likelihood. But then they found out I have a hereditary thing, too. Mm-hmm. I have this hereditary disposition to being extremely handsome and also for blood clots.
Those go hand in hand?
They do, actually. Yeah. Look at Bosch. Put yourself from us a little bit of the B.B. King tribute from the Grammys last night. It was pretty good. Gary Clark Jr. and Chris Stapleton. Chris Stapleton about the hottest thing in country music all of a sudden. Big, fat, long-haired, crazy-looking dude. Big, fat, long-haired, big old beard, sings his tail off. So there you go. I mean, if you're singing in country bars somewhere in America today, and you're up this morning doing your regular job because you're trying to get discovered, and you're going, well, I got to lose some weight, and I got to shave my beard, and I got to take a shower. No, you don't. I believe those are all career negatives for you.
Kind of like a young Willie Nelson.
Think Willie was it. Never a big fat guy, though.
No, but he was always scraggly with the long hair and the beard.
A lot of country guys, you know, are in, you know, decent shape and they're all crossover stars. I like the idea of a big, fat, bearded, long-haired guy as a country star. Good for him. And his high cholesterol. So, but he's got a great voice, Chris Stapleton.
He has a really good voice, yeah.
So we'll dabble in, dip in, and play a little bit of the Grammys for you throughout the morning. Hey, we want to note with sadness and our condolences to the family of Jim Phillips, the athletic director at Northwestern, and a close friend of Dave Ennett's and a close friend of all of ours here. He's just a terrific guy. They lost Jim's brother, uncle to Jim's kids, and a beloved guy. I never had a chance to meet him, but Tom. Passed away last weekend suddenly, and it was a sad deal. I know you were at the services yesterday.
Yeah.
We just want to say that we're very sorry to hear that, and we're feeling for the Northwestern athletic family, but Mr. Phillips in particular.
Yeah, very close family. Jim has talked a lot about his siblings. He's from a family of 10 kids.
10?
Yeah, and this was one of his older brothers, and he's the youngest, as a matter of fact. So I know it was a very, very difficult time for him and his family.
God bless him, man. Mm-hmm. Don't you love the idea that you could have 10 kids and you could say it was a very close family?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
How many times you have two or three kids in a family and they're not talking to each other?
Good
It's a good example for the rest of us.
Good point.
At 7:14, we will get to the Hawks replay coming up here in a little bit. Oh, and the bras filled with meth story. And no, I'm not making that up. Some more hypocrites in politics. And there's an interesting twist on the Supreme Court process. Now, this in all likelihood won't happen, but here's the angle. Let's say the Republican temper tantrum continues. And again, I'm not excusing the Democrats from this. If the situation were reversed, the Democrats would be just as big a bowl of hypocrites as the Republicans are being. But here's how this could work. If a Republican wins the White House and there's no Supreme Court replacement named, and the Democrats win back the Senate, which could happen.
Right.
The Congress is seated on January 3rd.
Yes.
The president is not inaugurated until January 20th, which means President Obama would have 17 days to have the now Democrat-controlled Senate vet a nominee and vote on them and get who he wants anyway.
How about that?
Boy, that karma would suck for the whiny Republicans, wouldn't it? Huh?
And that could happen because they could fast-track that. I know you have to have hearings.
I just think all the nuclear option where you could jam it through and just go to a straight vote. Having said that, Mitch McConnell knows the rules inside and out in the Senate, and the Senate makes their own rules, and with the Republican control. They may specifically try to somehow rewrite the rules where that couldn't happen between now and the end of the year. But here's a simple solution. As I wrote in my blog, just do your damn jobs. Just do your damn jobs. Mm-hmm. Put up a nominee, vote on them. That's it.
I feel sorry for all of the justices who are being considered now because they're literally right in the middle of a ping pong game, right in the middle of partisan politics.
Well, Jonathan Carl suggested this morning what I wrote about yesterday in the blog, that there may be a sacrificial lamb, somebody who takes one for the team, who is put up as a nominee, and the Republicans vote him down or don't take a vote on him or her. Mm-hmm. And just to demonstrate the partisan politics that are going on and take those moderate and independent voters and turn them off and maybe push them to the Democrat side. So you may see that play out as well. As the nonsense continues, 7-16, how do you score 7 goals? Well, you do it one at a time. We'll get to the replay coming up. Mary's here with your traffic trouble spots. What's happening, Mary? /7:28, that's the love theme from Breaking Bad. The Australian police have seized $1 billion Australian dollars worth of drugs, meth particular, a brand of meth called ICE. Is ICE, let me go to Kevin on this. Kevin, you take a lot of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Is ICE a generic name for meth, or is that a specific strain of meth?
That's the Australian slang term, Steve.
I got it. Okay. The meth was stuffed in a shipment of silicone bra inserts and art supplies. Why would the bras and the art supplies be shipped together?
To confuse people. I don't know.
I mean, who puts that stuff in the same package? The total value in U.S. dollars is $700 million. According to authorities, it's one of the biggest arrests in Australia's history. The really creative writer for this story wrote, it's the biggest bust.
I get it.
This particular form of ice was liquid meth. So I didn't know that.
In your bra?
What do you put, meth in a juicer? And you come out with liquid meth?
Well, you could put it in a vial. It definitely would give you a lift.
So you pack. Yeah, well, look at you. This has resulted in 3.6 million individual hits of meth being taken off the streets, according to the local justice minister. 4 people have been charged in the arrest, the bust, if you will. Australian Customs first discovered around 190 liters hidden inside thousands of... it's on gel bras. Oh, this makes sense now.
Yeah, you put it in the gel part.
Oh, yeah, okay. So there's like a... Like, you know, on the front of underwear, you got the flap, right? You got the little flap, unless it's the Tommy John where you got the top flap. By the way, good idea by Tommy John. But on the bras, are these like little pockets where the gel inserts would go?
The gel is on the inside. Well, I mean, I don't wear the gel inserts, but uh-huh. The gel is on the inside of the bra. Yeah, it's not like a packet of gel that's taped on the front.
But is it a removable thing so you can wash the bra so you can take out your gel inserts?
No, you can... To cut it out if you want to, but you wouldn't.
Oh,
really,
I thought it'd be like
to.
a pocket where you could pop in your little your silicone thing.
No, you don't. I haven't done that. Maybe some people do.
Well, let's go to Mary. Do you have any expertise in this area, Mary?
I'm very confused.
Where do you put the silicone bra inserts?
I don't know.
Do they come with
I've
the bra?
Yeah, it comes or in, dealt with.
It so
comes
it's sewn in the inside
yeah,
the bra.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then how do you put your? Okay, Dave is nodding. Yes, Dave.
No, I was disagreeing with Mary.
He knows.
From his recreational cross-dressing. So then you'd have to cut the bra open to put the meth inside the bra.
Yes.
Okay.
And then you can just sew it back.
Part of the reason these guys probably thought they were safe is it's impossible to take a bra off, depending on who you are. And you know how many times? They probably thought, listen, if we're lucky enough to have Australian teenage boys trying to create the detective force to do this, they can't get a bra off anyway. Mm-hmm. We'll be just fine. Oh, I'm being told that they were actually in a big shipping container. An additional 530 liters of the drug were found concealed in art supplies.
That's probably not a bad place
well,
to
yeah,
put it.
Yeah, it can be like paint or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, somebody talked, Mary. Somebody squealed.
Steve, I did some research on the silicone bra inserts.
Yes.
The ones being sold at Kohl's for $30, by the way, uh-huh. $29.99 to be uh-huh. exact.
All sizes?
Always on sale.
This says you slide it like in the bra, not like a pocket of the bra. You know what I mean? Like so in between the bra
Oh, like you put it against your boob and then you put the bra on?
That's I get it. Like a sports bra, you know, Andre, that has that little side pocket that you have the pad that goes in.
No, but what Kevin's saying is what Kevin's saying is you put the gel inserts on your boobs and then you put the bra on.
So it's bra, insert, boob.
No, but the insert has to go like somewhere. It can't just sit on your boob.
It's like
what it looks like in this
photo.
It's like a washer.
Right.
Well, would you put a gel
insert?
What
if the thing exploded? You'd have to wear like a nursing pad to make sure nothing happened.
Think about it. You wouldn't put a gel insert, you know.
On my junk?
There.
A gel insert on my junk? No, I wouldn't.
And take a look at your junk.
No.
Would it burn if it exploded?
I don't know.
This is difficult.
I got nothing.
What if you're wearing a meth-filled bra? Are your boobs acting in a strange and unusual way?
I think these were probably in the container. I don't think they had all these women with meth in their bra walking
can't
through like a metal detector.
Can't you let me picture all the Australian women walking around in meth bras?
Sorry.
Steve, they have a half-moon push-up pad, and they have a light-as-air push-up pad as well.
Yeah, I know. We're all studying it at the CBI.
And they usually have clothes on top of the bra, Steve.
All right, so they balanced the gel inserts. In Kevin's world, they balanced the gel inserts on the boobs and then put the bra on.
That's what it appears to be, at least in these photos.
In Kevin's world, yes.
7:33. I'm sure the texters are already jumping on this one.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young bear's defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
By the way, some great text coming in on our regular segment, Meth Bra Talk. Kevin, do we have any sponsors for Meth-filled Bra Talk yet?
Working on it. Sales is trying to sell it immediately.
The great Dan Hampton, the Hall of Famer, will be one of the featured roasters in giving it to Richard Dent on Saturday night. I'm telling you right now, and Hamp knows this, if you want to do something great for the future of this city and great for kids to help them maximize their lives, Saturday night is a perfect example. And Richard Dent not only agreed to do this, he was enthused about it. Of course, that could mean he got hit in the head too many times, Hamp, and he doesn't know what a roast is.
Yeah, well, I guess we're going to have to figure out exactly what he remembers and what he doesn't come Saturday night. Maybe we can get out of there alive. But I will tell you that, and I think I mentioned this before, I you know, part of this deal with, you know, the 30 for 30 and all that, the underlining theme of that football team was a lot of great players, but man, there was a lot of characters on that team, from the head coach all the way down to the kicker. And Richard was one of the most notorious of all of us. And there's lots of, let's just say this, there's fertile fields to cultivate when you want to bring up some things that Richard may get a little embarrassed about.
Well, I think people understand this if they're football fans, but maybe they don't. You spend the most time with your particular unit. In other words, defensive line is going to be with the defensive line more than they are with the rest of the team or the rest of the defense. So those are your guys, right?
And that's one reason why Mark Trestman failed. He tried to split everybody up and put a quarterback with a DB and an offensive tackle next to a linebacker. You want to be with your guys. And, you know, it's kind of like your group, your little club, and you wind up spending countless hours, you know, over the course not only of a week, but a month, of a season, of a career. I played, what did I play, 9 years with Richard? I spent more time with him than his ex-wife did. But wait a minute, I'm using more.
Well, that's your opener. Don't give up your opener. Yeah, because here's the thing, you think about it. One of the greatest things about football is each unit has a specific skill that you bring in. I mean, God love baseball. I love baseball. But baseball, there's five tools. You got to do one of the five tools, or you got to do all of the five tools, or some mixture of the five tools. The defensive line has a specific skill set that's specific to the defensive line. So, of course, you're going to know those guys better than anybody. How tough was Richard Dent when he played?
You know, I'll tell you this. You know, we had some really tough guys, you know, that
there.
Play through injuries and all that. And Richard played with a lot of injuries. Don't get me wrong. But what Richard was exceptional at, he had a couple of things. He had a great first step. He could turn the corner. And you say, well, that didn't sound that hard. Get up there and try it. I mean, those two things were just so vital to his greatness. But more than that, and we had a lot of guys like this, Steve. We had a lot of guys that played angry. But we would go beyond that getting angry. We would kind of get, I don't want to say crazy or nuts, but we would, and Richard was one of the, you know, Wilbur, Otis, me, Richard, Mongo. I mean, we would get like goofball out on the field, and that's when you play your best. And, you know, they call it getting on the edge. And Richard could get to the edge probably as quick as anybody I ever played with, and he had to, and you know what, I used to say, you know, the three things you don't want to see in football is small, slow, and friendly. Well, Richard was never friendly on a football field. He always wanted to jack your jaw.
You know, you see guys now that will celebrate like it's New Year's Eve when the team's down 48-0. And they somehow get a half-ass sack, and the quarterback falls down instead of getting tattooed.
Lamar Houston.
Yeah, I never, ever, ever, and this is friendly memory, of course, but I never saw that 85 Bears team, or that whole 80s Bears unit. I never saw you guys get cheated on a sack. And you know what did most of the celebrating after a sack was the rest of the guys.
And you know what? It was funny. My wife, we're watching. You know, I mean, you know, the last month there was so much, you know, on the 30 for 30 film clips, this and that, blah blah. She saw a lot of it, and she and Richard, you know, Richard would kind of burst into the backfield, take the quarterback, and just body slam him, and then just kind of walk away like, "How dare you try to throw the ball when I'm around?" And you know. I love it. And you're exactly right. These knuckleheads today, they act like they just reinvented the wheel and they're jumping and doing cartwheels. And I got to tell you, we had a certain swagger that, hey, that's our job. We didn't do anything different.
You know, Saturday night's going to be a ton of fun, Dave. And it's the BBF Family Services Group that's doing this. Mm-hmm. And again, Richard was very enthusiastic about this because the North Lawndale community, and specifically the young men of that community, this gives them a chance to maximize their lives, job opportunities, you know, business interests, things of that nature. All the money raised is going to be kept in the North Lawndale area for that reason. And I think it's a wonderful thing, and it's great of Richard to do this. But one of the people that's – and I'm pretty sure Hampy's coming in. I don't know that we've gotten a confirmation yet. But I heard Joe Montana's coming in. Is there a chance Dent could have some sort of flashback and hit him again?
I hope. You're saying, what are you saying? He cost us two trips to the Super Bowl. The guy beat us in the championship twice. Oh, my God. And, yeah, that's, you know, that's part of the deal. And I hope he is, you know, probably, you know, I don't know if Montana or Marino. I don't know a whole lot about who else is coming in, but I know some of the guys on our team, and we've already done conference calls on
the material.
Strategies, yes.
Yeah, they're game planning for the roast. Dan Hampton, Otis Wilson, Steve McMichael, all are going to be there. It's a long line of folks. Michael Wilbon from Part of the Interruption is going to be in charge of trying to wrangle you guys in. I love the idea that these guys might go long and Wilbon's going to have to get them to sit down.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to watch. And I'm sure that everything will
we'll
be.
We'll see how easy it is with us after he's dealt with Kornheiser all these years.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point.
And I'm sure every comment will be suitable for family viewing and listening.
Well, it's funny because it's interesting you say that, Dick, because we talked about this yesterday because we thought, well, maybe put a video out afterwards, you know, and you could charge for it. We figured the edited family-friendly version would be about 45 seconds long. But it's an entire evening of good times and then an afterburn after party as well with a lot of these guys too. So, SAC, the roast of Richard Dent, go to the WGNRadio.com events page. Just click on the links. Get your tickets. And, Hamp, thanks for doing this. It's an important thing, as you know, and I'll see you Saturday.
Can't wait. Thank you so much. Richard, get your earplugs. Thanks, guys.
See you later. I got the easy part. I'm just going to go get people started.
I was going to say, you guys are not worried at all about roasting Richard Dent. I mean, he could crush you guys.
Okay, wait a minute.
Well,
think of who else is going to be up there.
Yeah.
Steve McMichael.
Right.
Dan Hampton.
Dent's
just one of, pick your poison.
I just get between Mongo and Hamp and go, could you hold me?
I fear for you guys.
No,
trying to protect you.
No.
And your well-being.
I'm going to actually bring in Paul Coit's daughter, Ruby, with that perfect little British accent, and have her insult me for 3 or 4 minutes up front just to get the night started.
Hello, Daddy.
Mary's here. Traffic trouble spots. Again, WGNradio.com/events page for SACT, the roast of Richard Dent to benefit the community of North Lawndale on Saturday night. Hope you can be there. Go ahead, Mary. I got the story out of Kentucky. You're going to have to ask your wife's permission if you want Viagra. This could be awkward. You know, maybe you're not quite ready to tell your wife that things aren't working the way they used to.
You just maybe need a little help.
Right? Kentucky lawmaker has introduced a bill that would require men who are seeking ED drugs like Viagra to do the following. You have to be married. You have to swear on a Bible you'll remain faithful.
What?
Yes, and you got to get a note from your wife.
What the hell's going on out here?
The legislation is put forth by a Democratic rep named Mary Lou Marzian. She says it may be only symbolic, but it comes as an answer to Republican Governor Matt Bevin's informal consent decree that requires women to consult with a doctor before having an abortion. I thought that was standard procedure when you go into an abortion clinic that a doctor looks at you, no?
Well, yeah, you have to get the exam.
Well, then why do you need a law in Kentucky?
I don't know. That's kind of weird.
So, again, if you're a man in Kentucky and you'd like Cialis and a couple of bathtubs, get a note from your wife first and be prepared to swear on a Bible.
That you're going to be faithful?
Swear on a Bible that you're going to be faithful. So you got to get a note from mom and a note from God. Otherwise, no little blue pill for you.
Isn't that what you do on your wedding day? Kind of?
Okay, so you have to re-swear. I'm swearing again. Texters, thanks for all the great texts. One of the texts that came in made me laugh. It says, Cochran, he's saying that Mary has resting bitch face like you did last week and she stuffs her bra? I didn't say that
what?
At all, Mary.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't
did
say
you?
That at all. No, you listen to the show. 773, good to hear Steve, a boob discussing boobs.
Well, you own the Cochran Breast Alps? Or what's that?
The what?
What do you all?
What? No, it's a legitimate scientific discussion. It's the CBI, the Cochrane Breast Institute in the Alps.
Oh, in the Alps, yeah. Right. Okay.
We just got a
right.
new government grant. We're doing some really impressive work there. It's called the Kate Upton Grant. From the 815, the gel insert goes between the breast and the bra. Trust me, I sell them at a bridal shop that I own. Okay. Well, there you go.
Oh, so it's not inserted in the bra then? Well, they cleared that up.
From the 847, Steve, it's a boob gasket. 8630, you guys are killing me. I'm choking on my breakfast. They're called cutlets. No, don't think that's good.
Cutlets?
Yeah, that's not what you want to hear.
Not a good word.
708, Steve, some of the bra inserts are sewn in other bras. They have a slit in them, so yes, you can take them out and you can wash them. All right, so there you go. We've cleared up two major issues, Kentucky Viagra, which is a band I used to be in, and where you put the gel insert on the boobs. Dean Richards is coming up after 8:30. More talk of who will replace Antonin Scalia and Jeffrey Stone at the University of Chicago Law School. We'll be on to talk about that. At 8:02, what am I doing here? Before we go any further, I want to say hi to a young broadcaster who is just walked by the studio and is hoping to make it in this business. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, I heard that you could get me a job because of the influence you have in the broadcasting industry.
Yeah, I know
industry,
a lot of people.
So
yeah,
I do want to talk
about it. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
We miss having you on here every day.
Well, I miss being here every day. I miss the morning crew. But at the same time, for the first time in 55 years, I'm not getting up at 2:45, which is kind of nice. But, yeah, I do miss all of you here in the morning. And
we did probably – you probably didn't hear. We are moving the morning show to noon. So it just
seems
more
convenient. So you'll be
starting at 12? Yeah, 12 noon. Everything good?
Everything is good, yes. Went to Cincinnati over the weekend, and it was quite an event for the National Outstanding Young Farmer Program. The program is 60 years old. I have emceed the awards banquet for 50 years, and John Deere has been the sponsor for 40 years.
If you do the math on this, there are kids that you would have seen come up 50 years ago,
right,
who are now turning their farms over to their kids.
Very true, and they had 10 finalists from all over the country. The four that were picked as the four national farmers, Washington State, New Jersey, Connecticut, and North Dakota. And none of them were born when I started emceeing this event.
It's got to be very gratifying.
So maybe I'm getting old.
No. Does he always say? Mature.
Mature.
It's got to be very gratifying, though, to have these kids that you've met through the years who come up and go, hey, I won this year or that year, and telling you the stories of how they're doing.
Yes, it is, because the great thing about the Outstanding Young Farmers, they have a fraternity. And we had people there who had been Outstanding Young Farmers 50 years ago. And they come back, and, you know, a lot of friendships. As I say, if you're picked as a National Outstanding Young Farmer, you'll never have to stay in a hotel again, because you'll have friends all over the country that will invite you to stay at their farm. Oh, the other thing I got to do, finally visited my grandson at Miami of Ohio. I had not been at that campus before.
It's beautiful.
And ice hockey is the big thing, Dave.
Oh, yeah. They have a very good hockey program. Yeah,
very big.
It's a beautiful campus, too.
It really is a beautiful campus, and he's a sophomore in the business school. So.
Before we get to Dean and some traffic here, we haven't had a lot of moisture this winter by way of a bunch of snow. What's that going to do to farmers?
So far, we're okay. Moisture, and California is getting helped, and that's where they really need it. Drought is not over, but the snowpack, I think, is like 106% of average already, and March is a busy time. So moisture-wise, at this point, we're okay. Some areas are too wet. I talked to a cotton farmer from down south Saturday, and he said he's got cotton in the field that he couldn't harvest because of wetness.
No, can't get the equipment out there.
Yeah, can't get the equipment. So.
Wow.
But we'll be okay.
All right. Every year, right?
Yes.
Otherwise, we don't eat.
You're right.
So, thank you, my friend.
Hey, good to be here.
Nice to see you.
We've come together on this special day.
Special day.
This message loud and clear. Looking back, we touch on some of that.
Stevie Wonder doing the Earth, Wind, and Fire tribute last night at the Grammys.
You will find.
And what's the name of that a cappella group, Dean?
Pentatonics.
Pentatonics, and they're like, they're happening, right? They're a big deal.
Oh, they're a very big deal. And, you know, a cappella is so hot right now, and they're one of the most popular a cappella groups in the world. One of the many tributes that was part of this Grammy show last night. You know, in this broadcast that wound up being like 3.5 hours, they only gave away 8 awards on camera.
Is that true?
This
so it's just
mostly
performances wall to wall.
That's right. Mostly a performance show.
Isn't that interesting how it moved along because the performances were you know, a high concept, high art. And with the exception of the technical problems with Adele, musically, you know, everybody killed it all night long.
I thought for the most part, I mean, you know, I'm not going to remember the show as, wow, that was the year that, you know, so-and-so sang. I don't think there was any moment like that. But also, I don't think there was anything that awful on the show also. Adele, unfortunately, had some technical problems. She talked about it. There was a major dropout of her microphones in the beginning. There was some bleed over from some of the other bands. You know, they have several stage and they're setting up other bands.
We were talking about this earlier. If you're the sound guy that rigged Adele's piano, where the mic fell over and screwed up the Adele performance,
fell on the strings inside, right?
You think he's on Career Builder or Monster this morning?
he would be wise if he did something like that.
Unbelievable.
I loved Adele though. She explained some of the problems and apologized. But and then also, you know, just ends her tweet about this whole thing. Bleep happens.
Exactly.
That's, you know, it's a live show. You know, it's going to happen. And then what I really love is she said, on the way home, I stopped at In-N-Out Burger and treated myself just as a way. You know, there's nothing, you know, no problem in the world a good double-double can't solve.
Yeah, and In-N-Out Burger is a hole in the wall that turned into this California West Coast institution. And if you don't go to In-N-Out Burger when you're on the West Coast, you don't eat burgers.
It's a pretty good, you know, for fast food, it's pretty
and there's like four fantastic choices.
Yeah, there's not a lot. There's not a lot to choose, but everything's made fresh. That's why it's so delicious there. Don't get me started on In-N-Out Burger.
All right, so as you know, Dean, I'm a Swiftie. I've always been a Swiftie, a Taylor Swift fan. And I was up late last night tweeting with the other Swifties about Taylor Swift's hair. I thought she looked cute.
I thought she looked very nice last night. Number one, I have been critical of her performances. Sorry, Swiftie.
What?
Some of her live performances I have been critical of on these award shows. But I thought she sounded fantastic last night. She opened the show. She sounded great. She looked great. She won three awards last night for Best Pop Album of the Year.
Didn't she take a shot at Kanye?
She took a major shot at Kanye when she won Album of the Year. It's one of the big three awards. It's probably the big award of the night, Album of the Year. She won it and, you know, thanked everybody, but she said she wanted to just, you know, say to young women, don't let anybody get in your way. Don't let anybody tell you that they are responsible for your success other than yourself. And this was such a thinly veiled slap in the face to Kanye West, who for has been in the news the past week or so for his crazy tweets. One of them is where he's been saying that he was the one that made Taylor Swift famous. And Taylor Swift has just pretty much been ignoring him. But this was so beautiful last night because it was a nice positive message for young women. You know, don't let things get in your way. Don't let people get in your way. Don't let people take credit for your success. That was, you know, clearly for Kanye West, but didn't even mention his name. So that was one of the highlights of the show for me last night.
I like her again now.
Yeah, and but you didn't like the hair.
It was okay. It was cute. It was a bob. A lot of the ladies were sporting the bobs last night. She's okay. She's okay. I think she's just she's so ubiquitous. I mean, it's always she's in the front row and so uber excited for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, now that she gave a nice speech, now I like her again.
You got to join the Swifties.
I do find it, it's curious. I don't think that it's bad, really, but it is just curious. She's into she's singing along with every song. She's dancing along with every song. She knows the words to every song. When Ed Sheeran won for Best
She lost her mind.
Song of the Year, she didn't win. It looked as though she had won. She was so excited.
But didn't they date? Am I wrong about that? I thought they went out for a while.
I would have to go through my book of people Taylor Swift has dated to see if he's got a chapter.
Hold on a second. I'm being told she dated Dave for over a year and a half. Dave Ennett, is that true? You and Taylor Swift?
No, that's not true.
Dave is denying it publicly, Dean. Please
I was
make
married before she was born. I mean,
that doesn't mean you couldn't have dated her.
Yeah.
No, it does, Dean.
The memorial tributes, Dean warned us yesterday, Andrea, the memorial tributes would be over 5.5 to 6 days long.
Yes.
There were a lot of them.
Turns out the show was mostly memorial.
Right.
There were a lot of them.
Last
Gaga
night
was brilliant. You got some audio on this?
We have. It's a little montage.
All right, let me hear some of it.
Lionel Richie, the Eagles tribute, the Stevie Wonder tribute to Maurice White, and Lady Gaga tribute to David Bowie.
I know it sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain.
And you know just what to say.
Gaga was brilliant.
I thought she was great.
Oh,
I loved it. People are trashing everybody. People are trashing Gaga. I thought she was fantastic with her tribute to David Bowie.
What could you have negative to say about Gaga? She busted her tail to do that.
She's so good.
And it was obvious that how much she respected and worshipped David Bowie.
No
and
kidding.
Really
she even did the dance moves.
She got a David Bowie tattoo over the weekend. The face of David Bowie. She had tattooed onto her thigh or
well, let's
belly
not go crazy.
Much like you did with me.
I have a Dean tattoo. Yeah. The Jackson Brown moment. Look, I love Jackson Brown. I love Jackson Brown. And Jackson Brown, the Eagles may not have been the Eagles without Jackson Brown.
Right.
And the Glenn Frey tribute that they did, but poor, you know, he didn't sing. He can't sing anymore.
I thought that was I didn't mind it. What I've been saying about
no,
the show.
No, it was sweet. He can't sing, but he was sweet.
He wrote that song.
Yeah, he did.
Easy with Glenn Frey, so it's perfect that he would have sung it. But I thought of all the tributes, it was the most lackluster of them all. The Bonnie Raitt singing with a country and an R&B singer. Saluting B.B. King was also fantastic. I was a little surprised they didn't do something more for Natalie Cole. She was part of the memorial montage.
Point.
But I, for some reason, I just thought that also would have been included. And then, you know, they pay tribute to the guy.
And no tribute to Fish from Barney Miller. Abe Vigoda. Not a single song for Abe Vigoda.
A little odd that they would have overlooked that. There's always one big omission. In every single one. But then in the heavy metal section, Dave Grohl comes out and he talks about the death of Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead, and talks about his influence. And then we get this group that's called the Hollywood Vampires, who are Alice Cooper, who are Joe Perry from Aerosmith, and Johnny Depp. And they do a chainsaw rock and roll, kill your mother rock and roll tribute to Lemmy. Is part of the show last night, but just it was just like, you know, the odd trio in the bunch.
Well, there are some oddities throughout, right? Because I saw several tweets that said, when did Lionel Richie die? And then Lionel Richie comes up on stage because so much of it was memorials.
Right.
If you weren't old enough to know who Lionel Richie is, you're just thinking, well, look, that African-American dude seems to be enjoying himself.
Who's that guy they keep taking a shot of? Right. He was the Grammys Music Care honoree this year, their charitable arm. So that's why there was a tribute to Lionel Richie.
You know, I was at the Grammys two times, I guess. A couple times, maybe three at the most. And it's always a pretty good party. But I got to say, of all the award shows, they seem to have evolved this thing into the most entertaining TV. So good for them.
It's all performances. Among the big performances, you talked about Adele, but also Kendrick Lamar's performance. You know, I guess it depends on your age, whether you absolutely loved it or absolutely hated it. It was a little bit of a poetry slam, a little bit of African dance, a little bit of jazz, a lot of hip-hop. It was a searing statement on African-American life, so much so that CBS bleeped out some of the content of it.
As an artist, I think he's tremendous. I just think white folks are getting tired of being told they're racist because they're white, and there's, you know, a lot of that in it. And when the message is coming from a multimillionaire, it can fall a little flat. I get it. I think it's an important message. Every white person in America is not a racist.
Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, I didn't take that from the song that every white person.
Well, it was called "Every White Person in America is a Racist." That was the name of the song.
Maybe I just missed that. Yeah. That part. I took it as being that there are some problems that African American people face every day. That's how
no doubt about
I took the song. But so that was one of the extremely powerful performances that I admittedly didn't understand half of it, but it was certainly interesting to watch. And I got to throw in some Chicagoans last night. Common, Rhyme, my friend Rhymefest, who I was talking about yesterday, they, along with John Legend, won a Grammy Award for Best Song from a Movie from Selma. That was up last night. Buddy Guy won a Grammy Award last night. Mavis Staples won a Grammy Award last night. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that your personal friend, President Jimmy Carter, won a Grammy Award last night.
Which is pretty great.
In the Best Spoken Word category.
God bless him, and continued better health to him as well.
Hanging out with Selena Gomez after the show. I don't know what that's about.
Well, plus he was tweeting with Rhymefest, and I don't know how you weren't involved in that whole loop.
I got left out of that string. So,
all right, buddy, back to work for you.
Bye.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
842. Sadly, along with the obvious ramifications for the nation, the death of Antonin Scalia, even before his family has been given proper respect or time to grieve, the political arguments started. The political arguments are important, But it's important to remember the man, and a gentleman now joins us who knew him very well, and he is the Edward H. Levy Distinguished Service Professor at the University of Chicago through a long career as an author and law professor at Chicago, at the University of Chicago himself, and also somebody that knew Scalia from his days as a law professor. Here's Jeffrey Stone. Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are you?
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on, and I wanted to take a few minutes here and remember your friend, Justice Scalia, because I don't think we've taken enough time to do that, because we know he was a legal genius, but what kind of a guy was he?
He had two personas. I mean, Scalia, in his interpersonal relations with people like myself who disagree with him about pretty much everything, he was always congenial, lively, bright, engaging, liked to argue, somebody who I always felt great affection for and great respect for, even though we disagreed about everything. His public persona, which he created, was a very different one. It was someone who was intemperate and sometimes nasty and impolite. And so there were really two different visions of Scalia. And, you know, the fact that the people on the court who were his closest friends were Elena Kagan and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, like me, very much disagree with Scalia, speaks a lot about the interpersonal side of him. But as I say, the personal persona was something I think he created. I think he wanted that because he knew getting attention was a way to have influence.
And would you call it as much of a character as anything else? Because he was able to do his job professionally at the highest level, but he could still be this public character because when you become a Supreme Court judge, you're a very famous individual.
Well, most Supreme Court justices actually aren't very famous. Most of them are pretty anonymous to the American public. I don't think very many people know much about Alito, for example, or John Roberts, or knew much about David Souter. Scalia made himself into a public figure by putting himself forward. He once told me that the reason he expressed himself in his opinions with such vehemence and the reason he, in his speeches, would be so outspoken was in part because he wanted people to pay attention to his ideas. And the way to get the media, the way to get law professors, the way to get law students to pay attention to his ideas was to be a character, was to be somebody who people talked about.
I want to talk a little bit about what this means and where we go, but before we do that, let me get a quick traffic update here. Jeffrey Stone is a guest from the University of Chicago, and Mary is here with the traffic trouble spots. .849, Jeffrey R. Stone, Edward H. Levy, Distinguished Service Professor at the University of Chicago. A man who knew Justice Antonin Scalia very well. Would you explain to us, Mr. Stone, what an originalist is?
So an originalist, which is the philosophy of interpretation that Justice Scalia avidly propounded, is someone who basically takes the view that a court should invalidate a law as unconstitutional only if that law was one that the framers and ratifiers of a particular constitutional provision themselves anticipated would be unconstitutional under that provision. So, for example, take the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which provides that no state shall deny to any person the equal protection of the laws. An originalist would say that a law that prohibited African Americans from serving on juries violates the Equal Protection Clause because that's precisely the type of law the framers and ratifiers at the time the clause was adopted had in mind. That's what they wanted to outlaw. On the other hand, imagine a law that says that women can't be lawyers or that gays and lesbians can't marry. And the question is, does that violate the Equal Protection Clause? An originalist would say, no, that does not violate the Equal Protection Clause because we know that the people who drafted the Equal Protection Clause a century and a half ago did not anticipate or affirmatively intend, this is what the Equal Protection Clause would do. The alternative method of constitutional interpretation basically says that the framers were not originalists. They didn't intend to cabin the meaning of the words in that way. They understood they were putting a principle into the Constitution and that the principle could evolve over time. And therefore, if for later time we could see laws discriminated against women had many of the characteristics of laws discriminating against African Americans, then it would be appropriate to apply the Equal Protection Clause to them as well. So that's the difference between Scalia's originalist approach and the more conventional approach to constitutional interpretation.
Yeah, and I think you run into the same problems with the Bible and everything else where you go, well, I'm going to interpret the intent of those who are no longer here to clarify their intent. Having said that, counterarguments are easy to make as well. And here we are at the epitome of irony or hypocrisy, depending on your point of view, that people are standing up, and I'll use Marco Rubio as an example, standing up and saying we have to honor Justice Scalia, and by honoring him, we're not going to allow the President of the United States to nominate someone to replace him, which is a direct violation of the intent of the Constitution.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think that position is completely unconscionable. It's unprecedented in American history. It flies in the face of 225 years of tradition. No one who takes that position is being a responsible legislator or public citizen. It is truly incompatible in the most direct way with all of our constitutional tradition and all of the understandings of the Constitution.
Jeffrey, obviously, he was a very staunch conservative, but a brilliant justice. What do you think he would say about the potential partisan wrangling that's about to ensue and that has already ensued over this?
I would guess that if Scalia were looking at the question as a matter of principle, he would clearly say it is the responsibility of the Senate to advise and consent. The president is elected until his term of office is over. If the president presents a nominee who is qualified for the Supreme Court, it is the duty of the Senate to listen to that confirmation nomination and to make a reasoned, appropriate judgment. And one thing I can say is in the last 60 years, for example, there's not been a single instance in which the Senate, even when controlled by the opposing party, has turned down a nomination of a candidate who has been regarded as moderate and qualified. Not a single one. And for the Senate to say we're not going to listen to any nomination is completely unacceptable.
Yeah, and frankly, political suicide on some level, because the Republican Party has turned into this circular firing squad. And it takes moderates and undecided voters and goes, well, here's an entire party that's decided to ignore the Constitution they claim that we have to all honor. So, again, I don't understand the lunacy of it. But then again, how could you understand anything related to campaign 2016 at this point? appreciate your insight very much. And congratulations on all of your success. And you're certainly welcome here.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. Have a great day.
There you go. It's Jeffrey R. Stone from the University of Chicago, amongst his many other places of note. 8:54, the Wintrust Community Banks Hour continues. And so does this Steve Cochran Show. Number 588. After this, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on 720 WGN. Protesters convening downtown. Who are they, Andrea?
They're calling for the dismantling of ICE, or the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Problem is, as we've been talking about, they shut down traffic on Congress and LaSalle. About 100 people are literally laying in the street right now, and some have actually tied themselves together. So the traffic cannot get through at all. It's just an absolute nightmare. So, again, this is the they're calling for this dismantling of basically the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Department, which isn't going to happen.
Mary, there's no way to get around that, is there?
I'm trying to find out what exactly is happening, because they just said they're reopening it as we speak, and now they're saying it's closed once again westbound right at Clark on Congress and Clark. So all
lanes, if you're coming into the city,
still blocked. Well,
on the Eisenhower, don't take Congress.
To get off at the Kennedy or the Ryan,
right.
if you are aware of that, because this is not looking good. It's probably already backed up. It's backed up all the way. Let me see. Now,
they're still
from
there.
Mannheim. Yeah,
they're put on WGN TV. Actually, has a
is that a live shot?
It's a live shot that we're looking at right now. So they're still there. Some of them have climbed on ladders too in the middle of the road.
Yeah, there's some big ladders, and they're sitting on top of the ladders.
Okay.
They're linking arms.
It's funny. We're just talking about the Constitution. You have a constitutionally guaranteed right to protest. You don't have a right to stop traffic and create a public hazard like this. Arrest them all. Arrest every one of them.
I think that's what they're starting to do right now, too, especially when you chain yourself or you tie yourself together in the middle of a public roadway.
Yeah, and it's been over a half hour now. So,
and if these are immigration,
go,
you know what I would do if I were ICE? I'd go by and make sure everybody's a citizen. If you're all going to assemble in one place, you make it a little easier. Save me some time.
Deport him right there.
It's ridiculous. Again, what's protest rule number one? Don't impede my day. You want me to get my interest to back your cause? You got to find another way other than keeping me from going to work or doing whatever I need to do in my life.
Yeah, don't block traffic. Come on.
It's like stopping the shopping on Michigan Avenue. What did I do to you again? I don't get it. I don't get it, people. It's 8:59 coming up in the final hour of the program. David Orr will be on. David Orr is, what's David's title?
Cook County Clerk.
So he's in charge of making sure that we are all voting fairly and registered to vote and all of the same.
Yep, that we're all registered to vote.
And
yep.
David's had that job since 1928?
He's had it for a really long time. Yeah. He also performs marriage ceremonies, too.
Well, so do I.
Well, I know you do. I know. We'll interview you later. You both are great at performing marriage ceremonies.
I believe I'm 5 for 6.
What happened to the...
Got divorced.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That was my first one, too.
And then, so you learn from there, and now the rest were success stories.
Of course, it was his third marriage. So, you know, what are you going to do?
It's got to be him.
It's got to be him.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
Living for the City? Is that what this is?
This is, Done Nothing Yet. Done Nothing Yet.
I made this mistake the other day.
You did.
We should do an experiment. Pull Living for the City's guitar riff, see if it's the same.
Similar, but yeah, I'll pull it.
Just, you know, do it. Or actually, you know what? Just tell me you did it, and tell me I was right, and that'll save us some time.
Steve, we just checked. You are 100% correct.
I have several brilliant ideas throughout the day, and I bring them up, and I forget them about 12 seconds after I bring them up. So the best way to manage me is to go, yep, on it, totally on it. And occasionally I'll remember I asked for something, and then I'll be annoyed that nobody did it.
So what is it? How can I work with you when I have to work for
it's
you?
It's one of the great Ross Cochran quotes of all time.
Yes.
It's very hard to work for you when I have to work with you.
Yes. Not saying he's right, of course, but he's right.
It's 9:10 in the morning. Dave, you've got that big stair climb situation coming up. What is the story, the details? What do people need to know, and how can they get more information?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Steve. It is March 6th, the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb, presented by United Healthcare. It's Presidential Towers in Chicago's West Loop. Used to live there, I believe. He used to walk those stairs every day. We've got a big crew from WGN Radio. You can join us. You can join the team. You can climb one tower, two, three, all four towers, 180 floors, 2,340 steps, to be exact, if you would like to do that. But you can register now, and even if you don't want to climb or can't climb, you can still help with a pledge in support of the WGN Radio team. Register or pledge online at fightforairclimb.org or call 312-781-1100. 312-781-1100. Put on your climbing shoes, if there is such a thing, and come on out and join us on March 6th.
All right, and last year, you and Patty Vasquez were on competing teams. You're joining forces this year?
I guess we're on one team together now. That's okay. Not my decision, but...
You're more competitive. You'd rather have the same
no,
sort of battle.
Actually, I'm not. I think Patty is, though.
Yeah, she kind of is. Yeah. At 9/11, we have some sounds of the campaign to play for you. One of the things that has made Trump so non-presidential is the fact that he's cursing all the time. Now, this is one of the reasons I'm not running again this year, because I curse all the time and I'm trying to stop. You know, the funny thing is I mostly curse at work. Wouldn't you think you'd curse less at work?
No, I curse at work sometimes.
Yeah, you and your sailor mouth.
Well, off the air. I don't think we've
ever. Yeah, it's all off the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave, I rarely hear you curse.
I do not.
Oh,
you curse mostly at home then.
Well, the other day I slipped on the steps going down to the basement.
What'd you say? Damn.
No. A little bit.
You dropped the bad one, did you?
I did. I mean, yeah. But I had physical damage to my foot to show for it. So.
Well, that doesn't make it okay.
No.
See, your office isn't next to his, though. Whew.
Mary, you curse at work or at home?
I curse in the car.
By yourself?
While you're sleeping?
Oh, yeah, all the time. At people.
I don't hear Mary swear that much.
No.
Well, it's because you're not in the car with her.
Well, yeah.
I'm not alone in the car. Car is not good.
Is it road rage or what is it?
I think it is. I just kind of, you know, after reporting on traffic all day, when I actually get in it, I can't control myself.
Isn't it crazy that Mary does traffic all morning and she has road rage?
But she probably wants to say to all these people, don't you listen to me?
Yeah.
I warned you.
What's wrong with you?
Get off the road.
I told you.
It
was snowing.
How funny an image is that? Mary screaming, why didn't you listen to me? So the reason I bring this cursing thing up is because Trump is doing a lot of it. And look, it's not like we don't think that presidents curse behind closed doors. Presidents have always cursed. Presidents curse in meetings. Presidents curse to get things done. You shake hands with Putin, you might say, listen to me, you little rat face creep, amongst other things. I want you to do this or I want you to do that. But to get up in front of a room, including a room full of children, and drop the cursing, or not drop the cursing, but curse, it's not presidential. So Jeb Bush has made it into a little commercial. Here's a snippet.
He's a that's terrible. You can tell them to go themselves.
You're not going to raise that price. You understand me?
Listen, you mother. We're going to tax you 25%. I don't give a stop the son of a.
And just to clear this up, it's Bush's super PAC. The campaigns aren't allowed to interconnect or interact with the super PACs. It's the super PAC that's running those commercials. It's not Bush.
The question, are those all at campaign rallies, or is that just Trump and his everyday
One was
dealings?
Trump at a Denny's. No, those are all campaign speeches.
They're all campaign speeches, yeah, where he says, yeah, go F. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he says he's trying to stop. Well, you know, I can tell you, I've never been in a room in front of children where I've been throwing out F-bombs.
They love me. They love me.
Well, you've never babysat young kids. Wait till you start babysitting.
What are you talking
Abigail
about? Of course, I've babysat young kids.
Not your own.
Well, that's not babysitting, I suppose. But all right, so I've never babysat young kids. Still, yeah. So anyway, Trump taking it from the Bush super PAC. Now, some people may say, Steve, at least the people supporting Trump have got their act together, and those people are people that we ought to listen to because you would see how great a candidate Trump is if you'd listen to his supporters. Do you remember Omarosa?
Oh, of course. From The Apprentice, yeah.
All right. I'm going to give you an Omarosa clip in a second. She is a big Donald Trump supporter. And we'll see how sensible these folks are. But we have an emergency traffic update.
Well, we're hearing Ryan Burrow is on the scene, and he is saying that they're reopening the roadway and protesters are being arrested. So Congress and Clark should be reopened shortly heading eastbound.
Got it. All right. Thanks for that update. Omarosa Frizenglajan Farfignugan, whatever her name is, she was on the Fox Business Network yesterday, and she was the Trump supporter. There was a non-Trump supporter on another screen and the anchor in the middle. Okay, can you picture the three screens?
Yes.
The non-Trump supporter is a woman as well. I want you to listen to what Omarosa says in this clip.
My name is Omarosa.
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 Yes. So let's talk about Iraq and let's talk about Donald Trump's positions. When Tamara says that Donald Trump grosses out and
Tamara.
Is not substantiated, it's the same difference, boo. You want to come on with big boobs, then you deal with the pronunciation of your name. Look, Donald Trump stands firm on what his position is about us going into Iraq.
Wait
it is
second.
Not something that he just threw out
bringing,
there. He's been saying that for
up,
a decade.
Why are you
and
bringing up Tamara's boobs?
It's what he stood for.
Well,
because
I don't
she started going back talking about,
poop.
Oh, you were a Democrat and you supported Hillary Clinton. If you want to get personal, we can get personal.
Wait, how
let's
is
talk
this
about
how
Donald Trump and let's talk about
to do
Iraq.
The size of my boobs, considering that this is how I was born. I mean, I'm sorry I had
no, I called you a boob. I'm sorry. I should have called you a boob.
It's like the worst of The View. It's just people talking over each other, and it's everything I hate about cable news network stuff. But here's the thing. Omarosa took a shot at the two other women when they mispronounced her name. When the other woman corrected her on her name, she made a reference to her big boobs.
Right.
That's a Trump supporter. That's a Trump.
You know, wait, here's difference, boo. You want to come on with big boobs, then you deal with the pronunciation of your name.
What does that even mean?
Here's what is weird about this whole situation is because when Omarosa was on The Apprentice, she did not like Donald Trump. They had a very adversarial relationship. She was upset when she didn't win challenges and whatnot, and then I think kind of badmouthed him for a while. Then they had this big reconciliation. He offered
her a
job.
Wait. You're saying that Omarosa has a lack of ethics? What?
No,
or is that just your boobs talking?
They didn't get along.
Yeah. And by the way, Hillary Clinton had herself an odd day yesterday. Hillary Clinton yesterday was trying to make a point about an old commercial she liked. Here's a clip.
We need to get that dog and follow them around. And every time they say these things, like, oh, you know, the Great Recession was caused by too much regulation. You know?
She was referring to an old TV commercial where a dog barked every time a candidate said something that wasn't true.
Not a good idea. You know
not
what that
good.
You know what that reminded me of? Remember Howard Dean?
Yeah.
The poor guy's giving the speech, and we're going on to Michigan and Iowa. And he starts screaming, and then he goes, ah!
And Howard Dean disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hillary, please don't bark anymore.
No,
that's not good. It's not good. The sound of 2016, it kind of speaks for itself. By the way, in the continuing political wheel of hypocrites and fools, Marco Rubio should probably talk to his ad agency. The Rubio campaign put out a Morning in America type commercial for Rubio. Morning in America, arguably the greatest presidential campaign commercial ever done by the Reagan campaign in the 80s. And the Rubio version of Morning in America opens with a shot of a Canadian skyline.
Oops.
Come on.
And then one of my least favorite people, Harry Reid, Senator Harry Reid from Nevada, is talking about the outrage he feels over the fact that the Republicans would dare to claim that they should stop this judicial nomination process and what hypocrites they are and how dare they affect the people. The vote should belong to the people. The people are what's important. This is Harry Reid, a guy who blatantly lied about Mitt Romney's tax returns and lied for the majority of his career and is only, you know, retiring now because someone had the good sense to poke him in the eye, literally. I love both parties. I really do. That's why I'm so entertained by you guys when I get texts accusing me of being a left-wing nut job or a right-wing lunatic. If you listen at all beyond what you hear, then you know that I'm equally sick of both sides. I just wish I had a fix for you.
Everyone has just made a weird, so many weird gaffes over the past few months.
It's ridiculous. I mean, Harry Reid at least is consistently hated. So, there is a Valentine's Day story that we didn't wrap up that I was thinking of you, Kevin, when I saw it, and I barely had time to screen it, but it's a guy who got dumped right before Valentine's Day, and he sent out Instagram photos of himself with a very sad face, and I'm thinking he may be a Chicago guy. He's got a Bulls hat, which doesn't necessarily mean he's a Chicago guy. But he said he spent Valentine's Day with his one and only love, pizza, because pizza will never desert him.
Pizza will never let you down.
And next to him in his Instagram photo is a pizza slice-shaped pillow on the edge of his couch. Behind him is a pizza throw pillow, kind of a giant pillow, and he's wearing a pizza hoodie.
Yeah, this guy just gets it. I mean, that's a great Valentine's Day right there.
Yeah. So he seems to be very much into the pepperoni.
Does he indicate what kind of pizza it is?
Well, all the pizza decor is a standard cheese and pepperoni.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pepperoni guy, I understand.
Oh, by the way, he also has a pizza on his lap, and his iPhone 6 Plus has a pepperoni pizza phone cover.
Oh, this guy's serious. I need to meet this guy.
And his caption on one of his Instagram photos is, "Take another little pizza, my heart, now, baby."
Clever. Mm-hmm. Very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you guys think he sounds weird in any way?
No, it sounds completely normal to me, and now I want pizza.
It's 9:27. We need another break for the big story.
Yeah, one more.
Let's do that. We're back after this on 720 WGN. Express yourself. 9:40. Last day to register, the easy way, I guess would be the best way of putting it, David Orr, Cook County Clerk, joins us. And David, I have to I have to thank you because you are one public official that is always willing to grant access and help explain things to people. You and the Secretary of State, I would say, are the same in that regard, and we appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. I guess I got nothing to hide.
Why not? All right.
You guys are helpful because with elections, you know, it is a little confusing sometimes, and you know, you're only voting once or twice a year, so coverage is really helpful to people. It lets them know what's coming up.
Well, we're going to let a lot of people know right now, because even though in all the world of things you can pick on Illinois about, I think we've done a pretty good job of creating access to register to vote. However, today is a deadline for is that a proper way of putting it? You think the easy way to register?
Yeah, well, I use the word traditional. The traditional way to register, it's still pretty easy. You can go to City Hall. You can go to the public library. What's also important about today is all those deputy registrars, of which there's thousands of them, those people, today's the last day that they can register people. They come to your church or they come to the club or something. And so that's the last day for that. But because we know there's other changes, there's other opportunities. We don't want to discourage people from doing it today, but there's other opportunities coming up.
Okay, so David, talk about now Illinois. Talk about our primary here. So you can go to the voting booth. You don't have to declare till you get there. Kind of just give us the walkthrough.
Okay, first of all, you don't have to declare. All it is in Illinois, you even have to pick a ballot, and that might be Republican, Democrat, or if there's a third party. Sometimes there's a third party, like a Green Party. So you just ask for it. You're not registered like in other states, like Nevada, for example. You're not a registered Republican or Democrat. You just get to pick. And that discourages people, but that's why I want to emphasize it that way. It does go on your record as if you chose a Republican or Democratic ballot, but anybody can do that.
But you can switch. You can say Republican this year, and then the next election you can choose Democrat. You don't have to stay with one forever.
Absolutely. And in a primary, let's say you're a Democrat, but you want to vote in Republican primary. Maybe you like Trump or don't like Trump. And then, of course, in November you can do whatever you want because all parties will be on the ballot in November. So, yeah, you have that perfect right. And also remember, in Illinois, we have something very new, very important, called Election Day Registration. And that means if you miss all these other opportunities to register, or you don't register when early voting starts, which is another opportunity, then on Election Day you can do it. We're not encouraging people to do that, only because if Election Day is busy, we don't want to have too much activity going on about Election Day registration. But that's an opportunity, and so for those people, for whatever reason, don't get to it, they can do it that day.
There's no reason not to be registered. I mean, there's just way too many opportunities. I can't remember if I heard you on with...
One thing, if I might, on that,
yeah,
and because it goes to the heart of what we're trying to do, and even the president talked about it last week, is that part of the reason that so many people are unregistered is because they move so much. Okay, and so you have 500,000 people every year or two moving in and out of Cook County. Okay, those are people, many of them are registered, want to be good citizens. They don't realize, okay, when they move from Evanston to Lake County that they have to re-register. So one of the great things going on is we're tackling that problem. We're making great progress, and we're reaching a point now when you move from Evanston to, let's say, Bloomington, Illinois, your registration stays with you. And that's the way it should be. I'm not talking about new registrants. I'm talking about people that have been registered for 12 years. They make a move. They don't even realize they have to register again. So that is a lot of improvements on that front in Illinois. That's also what people call universal registration, and we're getting to that point, which will help a great deal.
Got a text here that said, if I'm an undecided voter and I can pick either ballot in the primary, does that commit me to the party I chose for the general?
No. No. The only people have to think about that are election judges. If you're going to be a Democratic election judge, then you should be taking a Democratic ballot. But no, everybody else can pick whatever party, whoever they want to vote for in the primary, and then they can do the opposite or whatever else they want to do in the general.
All right.
We're pretty open in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. David Orr, Cook County Clerk, joining us to talk about today. And the importance of today, again, is?
Is it's the last day for what we call traditional registration. So let's say, I want to re-register. Of course, you can do it online today, still, too. You can just grab your phone or iPad and look up CookCountyClerk.com, and you can register right online. But otherwise, today you could go to City Hall or Library. After today, you can't do it online anymore. You can't go to the public library, and deputy registrars can't register you. But there are other opportunities to register.
And David, you can go to the website to find where your polling place is, correct? Because the last, not the last time, but the time before, it had changed, and it was my bad. I didn't go, I didn't look. I just assumed it was at the same place. But go online and check where your polling place is.
Very important, because you can go online now. If you're a suburban Cook, you go to CookCountyClerk.com. If you live in Chicago, you go to ChicagoElections.com. The website is valuable for lots of reasons. It can tell you the information we just talked about, can show you where your polling place is. At least in the suburban Cook, we even have a candidate's guide for those who want to participate. So there's lots of information you can get, and it's good to do that. And it is important. You need to get to the right precinct. And we do mail to everybody. We mail to everybody where their polling place is. And if their polling place changes, okay, recently or in the next couple of weeks, we will do a second mailing to those people to tell them where the new polling place is.
I heard you on with Justin Kaufman the other night and on the download, and I think Justin asked you specifically about, are we ever going to see in our lifetimes the ability to vote on our phones? Are we going to have an app where we can actually vote? Because that obviously is the holy grail of getting whatever close number we can get to full vote totals.
I do believe that'll happen in our lifetime. I'm a little older than you, but I think it'll happen in our lifetime because there's so many young people that are committed to it. There's wonderful groups out there working on this, but the number one challenge still is we have to deal with the security issue. People say, well, but we do our money on banking. Now, the difference with the banking model, keep this in mind, there's all sorts of scandals and security breaches. But what happens is the banks eat those because they're so wealthy. So you someone may interfere and steal records from banks or others, as we see all the time, or big, large shopping
right
conglomerates and so forth. So, but for each election, it's a one-time thing.
Okay. Yeah. I thought that was
you can't get it wrong.
Right. I thought that was a great point that you made. That because I was on the other side as well. I'm going, come on, all the world's money is online. How can we not figure the vote out? But you're right.
Yeah.
That's a fixable problem in almost all cases. Your vote is not if that goes the way. But we got to be able to figure out a way to figure this out.
I do think good minds will prevail. It just takes a while because obviously. Voters as well as political parties are extremely nervous about, who might try and cheat in some way. We have something, for example, in Cook County that our voters don't even know about. We are one of the few places, maybe only two in the entire country, that do forensic testing. And the goal of forensic testing is we take a kind of a computer snapshot of the ballot way before we get started, when we're working at the warehouse. When we put all the key information in about who's running, we do it again, right before the election. We do it election day. We do it after election day. And our goal in that kind of, quote, forensic testing is to see if anybody tried to submit malicious software in some way that we could catch it. So we do a lot of things, but, we still want to be careful. And I do believe it'll happen in our lifetime, but it's a tough struggle right now.
David, do you think all the polling places throughout Cook County will eventually be all electronic voting? Because I know, again, where I go, I think there's one or two machines, and then the rest is you fill in the marker, the arrow with the marker.
I think what you just described will be the future when you say electronic voting, but it'll be different equipment, perhaps 2, 3, 4 years. And here's the key difference is if people understand what it looks like to vote on one of these machines, okay, maybe they're much more popular in suburban Cook. If we had more of them, 85-90% would vote on them in Cook County. Chicago, they tend to have fewer machines and they don't encourage it the way the suburbs do. But here's the key. The future will do this. The machine will look the same. You'll be able to go on like a touchscreen. You'll touch this, you'll touch that. Make it easy. You can change languages and all that stuff. But when you're through with punching everything, the card you put into the machine, you will take back out and then you'll put that in a scanner. And the difference there is kind of like when you do a paper ballot, you put in a scanner, is that this way people feel more secure about it, that you're touching the screen that you can't watch what's going on inside it.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
But as soon as you're done with all you're touching, you take that ballot out, look at it. Okay, well, I voted for Smith or Jones. It all says it right there. And then I put it in the scanner.
Okay? Yeah, so there's a comfort level there.
That's right. That'll be the future. And so that's electronic but not... it's not the same kind of electronic count.
Okay? Right.
That, I believe, is what you'll see. You're seeing it now in some places. You'll see a lot more of that. Because people, particularly the big cities, the urban areas, we need the touch screen. We now have 4 languages, and we might have 6 before long. San Francisco's got 8 to 10. Also, you got all these different ballot styles. Elections are complicated. And so it's important with a touchscreen, you can do certain things. You can have a bigger screen. Disabled can vote on it. If you've got an eye issue, you can make it darker and lighter. You can make it bigger and smaller. So I do believe that will stay the same. The difference will simply be that step. Like I say, you finish up. Now what you do is, if you're on the touchscreen, you finish up. You look at the little counter on the side, which shows you what you voted for, and then you push cast ballot, and you're done. I'm suggesting the future will probably be, when you're all done, it may say cast ballot, but then your ballot will come back out, and you'll walk over to the scanner and put it in yourself, and I think feel secure about that.
Yeah, I think people would feel better. Joe called, and several people texted about this as well, and we'll let you go on this. Sure. But they say the when they select a ballot, be it Democrat or Republican, in their case, they've had election judges, volunteers, make comments about it. You sure you want that one? That kind of thing.
Well, if that happens in my jurisdiction, Suburban Cook, I want to know, because that judge will be out the door. We know the difficulty in our system. Yeah, remember, our system is based on watching over things by having the two major parties pick the election judges. Now, many of the what we call committeemen don't actually do that. So we do it from lists we get. But you have Democrat or Republican judges. And they maybe with a friend outside of the polling place when you're kidding, so that's fine. But not there. I mean, there are places, Barrington, for example, is one of the Republican strongholds. Okay. And you wouldn't want those people laughing at the Democrats any more than you'd want a South Suburban area that votes 90% Democrat doing the same thing. So we educate our judges, but we got 10,000 of them. That can happen, but it shouldn't happen. If it does happen, we want to know about it and either teach those people or remove them.
Yeah, so let the Cook County Clerk, David Orr's office, know about that if it ever happens to you. Appreciate the time, as always.
And if it is, one final thing.
Yeah,
if you're listening to the city of Chicago, to save me the work, and that happens with Chicago judges, you should contact, like I said, ChicagoElections.com.
Chicago Elections. Don't give me any extra
work.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand. One last question just came in. There's no way to vote early in the primary, right?
Oh, sure.
Oh, you can vote early in the primary.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I didn't know.
Voting, it starts the 29th of February, and it goes for 15 straight days. And it'll be, we'll have 40-some sites in suburban
Cook, 50
in the city of Chicago. Oh, yeah, we always have early voting now. In fact, early voting now goes all the way up to the Monday before the election.
Well, that's great.
It's really good for the electorate. It's hard for those of us that run elections.
Right.
But it's good for the voting public. And, that'll all be, you can look all that stuff online. It'll be the usual things if you're suburban Cook, Evanston, Skokie, if you're out west, Maywood, all sorts of places, Cicero, if you're out south, Orland Park. There are a lot of sites, and they'll be open all day, okay, basically 9 to 5, and weekends. But you want to check which ones are open, particularly on Sundays, because there's fewer. Okay? So, yeah, those people that love early voting, that'll start again the 29th of February, go straight to the day before the election. And what's so valuable about this, one last point, and I'll shut up, is that when so many people, right, are voting early, okay, or they're choosing to vote by mail, that means our equipment goes farther. You mentioned earlier about the touchscreens. Well, if 30-40% of your people have voted for Election Day, that means on March 15th, it makes it easier for those election judges. It makes it easier for our people that have to fix equipment and so forth, because 30-35-40% of people already voted. So it's a win-win for us. Early voting is very popular. Starts on the 29th.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate it. That's a lot of great information and an education as always. And the website again is?
CookCountyClerk.com. For suburban voters, that's the easiest one to go to, CookCountyClerk.com. But anybody who wants to register can still go to that today. If you're a City of Chicago resident, it's good to go to ChicagoElections.com, because then you can also see where your polling place is, et cetera.
It's David Orr. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. We're back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are here. Did you see that David Bowie's son didn't like the Gaga?
Is that true?
David Bowie's son, Duncan Jones, shared his thoughts by tweeting the Oxford English Dictionary definition of the word Gaga.
Oh.
Quote, overexcited or irrational, typically as a result of infatuation or excessive enthusiasm, mentally confused. That was his shot at Gaga.
I guess.
He's just jealous they didn't ask him, evidently. Is he in the music biz?
I don't know. I don't know. I thought you might know. No.
I thought she did a great job. I
thought
loved
she was great.
It.
What did you like about the Grammys?
Lady Gaga that I heard on your show because I didn't watch it.
How did you miss the
because
Grammys?
Because the Grammys has—it's completely changed. It's a whole new show now, and it doesn't interest me that much
really?
Anymore.
I thought the performances were cool.
What's with all the music? That ruins it.
How funny though? Dean said they literally gave away eight awards.
I know
that was
kills
it.
Me.
Eight awards in 3.5 hours. So I mean, you did a math on that. That's one award for every.
Six
period
weeks.
Of time that you would do it.
Yeah.
35 minutes.
But they have other awards. Do they give those out on another night?
Nope. They keep them.
They just keep them.
Yeah.
Seems counterproductive.
A lot of people didn't see that coming.
But you can just Google the best parts now and watch it on your own. I mean, there was too much to compete with it. New X-Files, Better Call Saul. I didn't watch any of them.
Hawks.
That's what I watched.
Oh, you didn't just meditate the entire evening last night?
Not yet.
I know you're doing a lot of stuff now.
I'm doing acupuncture and I love it.
Okay.
And
are you
cupping. And
cupping.
Gua sha. It's all cool.
You said cupping. I was thinking of something else.
Yeah, you're telling the wrong people.
That's what Peyton Manning was trying to do.
Wow.
This is why David Bowie's kid complains. This is the reason.
He's going to look up Bill and Wendy in the dictionary in a few minutes, too.
He's not going to like what he finds.
Tell you what, we'll come back tomorrow and see what happens.
All right.
All right. Here's Bill and Wendy.